On today's Devils in the Details, personal terms have been agreed with PSG's Manuel Ugarte. We talked about Ugarte on the podcast not too long ago, but how likely do we think it is that a good deal gets done? We then take some time to answer some of your questions about defensive midfield, the winger situation, and more. Case, Euro has been confirmed, United have started preseason matches, a lot seems to be going on behind the scenes. Do you think the mood's rising a little bit around United and prospects for the season upcoming, or do you think you still have a lot of concerns, or maybe a bit of both?
I think that the general mood is certainly superior to that which it was a few days ago, a few weeks ago, no doubt. I think no matter how you feel about the coming season, you can be excited about the players coming in, because I think the players coming in are going to have long-term impact, which is much more important.
Yeah, and I think last episode we talked a little bit about whether the Euro signing signaled a move for another center back, or perhaps United were now going to move on to try and get a promising young defensive midfielder, or maybe even a fullback. The news seems to be suggesting that particularly news from The Athletic, in order to buy someone like Matthijs de Ligt, United might still have interest, but it'll depend on the ability to sell other center backs. And right now, the center back most linked with moves away has been Victor Lindelof, with some interest coming in from seemingly the Turkish Super League. And so I think with that said, we're going to have to put a pin on the de Ligt, and Jared Branthwaite stuff, but news has come in really quickly here for Manuel Ugarte. We talked about Ugarte on the podcast last week, 2 weeks ago, a couple episodes ago, and I think the conclusion we came to is that he was a relatively good fit, relatively good player, under 25, fits the bill largely for what United are probably looking for in this position, a lot of similarities to Casemiro, I think, but also some differences that we think might impede United's tactical ability a little bit less. Now that personal terms are agreed, it seems like there's going to be a fee negotiation. Some talks that a loan could be possible. Some talks that PSG could want up to 70 million euros for this. What do you think? We're not valuation experts, and it's kind of hard to be from outside the frame of the game, especially when the markets in the game are so bizarre. But what do you think Ugarte roughly would be worth for a team like United? And do you think it would be a mistake to spend something like 60 to 70 million euros on him?
I don't think 60 million euros is totally out of the realm of what's reasonable for Ugarte, but I also don't think that that is good value. I think that's probably a slight overpay for what he is. 70 starts to get exorbitant, I think. I think this is a good player. We said this on the podcast a few weeks ago. I don't think this is an impact player. I think he starts for United. I don't think he stars for United. I don't think he's irreplaceable. And I don't think he's a perfect profile fit. So with all of that in mind, I hope this fee doesn't balloon, because this is not a fee that I'd be comfortable with ballooning. I don't think he's so good that you can't miss out here. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I think with Ugarte, I personally feel like if this quote-unquote rebuild goes to plan, you probably look at him as one of the worst players in the starting 11 in two or three seasons. Like looking at players who I think might be playing for United at that point, I'm looking at Onana, Dalo, Yoro perhaps, Lisandro Martinez, Hoyland, Garnacho, Mount maybe, Mainoo. I definitely think Ugarte isn't on the level of most of those players relative to position. And so I think when you're looking to upgrade the team, you might be looking to upgrade on Ugarte at that point. And so I become wary of spending a huge fee on a player who ends up being like a squad piece in the longer term for this side, even though I think he's good enough to start and make United more formidable in midfield right now. And so for that reason, yeah, I would also be wary about the fee.
Yeah, I think that covers it basically then. I we'll see how this plays out. I will be happy if he does come in, but like I said, I won't be that excited about it. But I do think it's a step in the right direction in terms of rounding out the squad. It's just that there are, it's not a perfect fit.
We had a question from Moped Rental Business who asks, I'm guessing Moped Rental Business is not his actual name or their actual name. But they ask, with Onana deal seemingly dead, what would be our best defensive midfield alternative? And I think this is an interesting question because there's some suggestions that PSG might be using the money from this Ugarte move to fund their own pursuit for Joao Neves, who I think is probably an inferior fit within this current United team to Ugarte, but we have both spoken about Neves as like the best possible midfield prospect on the market this summer. So how do you feel about that? I guess two questions here. One is, do you think it is unwise to fund another club's move for a player that I think we'd both like to see at United? And represents a different talent bracket, perhaps, to someone like Ugarte. And B, given the choice, would you prioritize the fit of the player next to Mainu this summer? Or would you just try and get a player like Neves regardless, and then worry about trying to make the talent work within the setup when the opportunity arises?
So I'll start with the first part of the question. I definitely do not like funding another team's move for a younger, superior option. That's bad, in my opinion, especially when PSG should theoretically on the continental stage be a direct competitor of yours. Secondly, I would not prioritize fit this window if you can get somebody really talented for a few reasons. First of all, Mainu is still really young, and I still don't think he should be starting 50 matches a year. Yeah, I think as much as I love him as a prospect, I still think you can definitely build a midfield where he isn't starting week in, week out for good reason, and use him more as a change of pace option in matches where you think his skill set is best suited, and that way you can protect his legs. He doesn't have to get run into the ground. And so for that reason, I don't think you need to this summer find a perfect profile fit beside him, because ultimately you can find somebody who plays something more like his role. And that's not the end of the world, because we are I think we are years from needing to have perfect balance in the first 11 to achieve our goals. So yeah, that's my take on that. How do you feel about what I just said there?
Yeah, I definitely think a secondary issue here is dependence on Mainu at present. United really needed this press-resistant midfield figure, and then Mainu emerged from the academy and immediately became a starter because he kind of fulfilled that need. But I don't really think that means that the problem is solved. If you look at a squad like, we talk about Man City a lot on this podcast, but even if you look at other squads at big European clubs, Real Madrid and Barcelona come to mind, many of them have at least two who are better than Mainu right now at this stuff, who are better at the sort of deep build-up, receive and turn aspects of midfield play. And I think getting this one player and then focusing everything on him for the next 15 years is not optimal for him. It's not optimal for the team. And it's honestly not particularly optimal for United's results next season even. And so I think many people are focused on this physical defensive midfielder profile that is definitely needed. Don't get me wrong. I would have loved to have someone like Amadou Onana. But I also think there's this sort of press-resistant profile that was still needed. You saw United look to solve that need last summer with someone like Sofyan Amrabat. I don't think that need has gone away. And a couple of people have talked about, I think Karl Anka has been talking about this on The Athletic, Talk of the Devils. We've talked to him a little bit about it. I think he kind of theorizes that Mainu could be better even better than he is, with sort of like a deep player who can pass between the lines really effectively and cover defensive ground. I think kind of the template you're going for here is actually does compare. Carl didn't say this, but does compare Manu a lot to someone like Luka Modric, where you have like a defensive destroyer, that would be Casemiro, in one role with him, and then in another role you have like a deep passer who can kind of play the ball between the lines and get the ball into the final third. And I think you saw that at times, honestly, when Manu was playing with Amrabat towards the end of last season, that was beneficial. So I think there's something in getting two different sorts of midfielders to help this midfield. And I think it makes more chronological sense to get the physical one and then the sort of more technical one or the more build-up oriented one later on. But if the choices are Ugarte versus Joao Neves, I'm picking Joao Neves if you can afford it.
I agree with that. I think in an ideal world, you're getting somebody who is of a different profile to Manu, but when you've got somebody ludicrously talented who is more similar to him versus an option that isn't as ludicrously talented and maybe doesn't fit your age window quite as well, I think the question becomes a non-issue. Because right now, I think we're kind of more at the talent accumulation phase than we are at the fixing specific holes phase. Not to say that fixing specific holes isn't an issue. It's just I think the raw talent is what matters more right now.
Yeah, I'll add one more thing here. I think people are underrating Neves a little bit defensively because of his size. Relative to how big he is, I think he's very good at covering ground. I think he's quite strong in duels. I think he's quite good in the air. And I've previously expressed concerns about how stuff like that translates from a league like the Portuguese league to the Premier League, especially given his size. But I don't think this is like folding defensively to get a build-up midfielder. I also think Neves and Manu could probably be a reasonable partnership, if not a very good one at this level. And then eventually you would replace Bruno with that kind of defensive presence who would complete the midfield. So I don't think you'd be completely lost if you ended up with a midfield comprised of like Neves, Manu, Mount, Bruno, perhaps McTominay next season, even though I think the physical presence would definitely be a problem to some extent.
I agree that that's a possibility. I think we will see problems arise from that. Like you said,
I definitely think next summer it leaves you looking for another midfielder. But I also think if you get a physical midfielder, like I just said, next summer you're looking at what do we do when Manu is out. So,
yeah,
it just comes down to chronology of how you do this, and perhaps signing a physical midfielder makes the starting 11 better faster.
I mean, I'll be honest,
but then I'm also not convinced Ugarte is that guy.
I think next summer, if you sign a physical quote unquote physical midfielder this summer, I think you're just looking at how do we make the raw talent of this midfield superior next year? And I think probably that either means upgrading on Manu or it means upgrading on Bruno in some respect. And that's not, again, this is not to say that I don't think Manu is a long-term starter. I just mean he's still going to be 20. Will he still be 19 in a year? I think he'll
be 20.
He doesn't need to play every match. He shouldn't be playing every match. And I do think he has like legitimate physical limitations that mean that playing him in the same midfield as Bruno is pretty. It's not ideal. And so, yeah, I think we're going to be looking at that as if we solve a bunch of these other issues, I think that will become an issue that comes into focus. But we'll see. We'll see if I'm right about that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much good on that topic. Do you want to talk about the great question we got on email a couple weeks ago here?
Sure. Yeah. So we got a question from Guy Cody, and he sent us a very kind, long email that I'm not going to read the entirety of, but basically the basis of it was that he thinks that we're a little low on Ahmad, and the role he's going to play in the coming season, that he thinks potentially Ahmad could be a starter. Aaron, what do you think about that? Where do you stand on Ahmad? We did discuss wingers a little bit 2 weeks ago, but I think the conversation didn't go as smoothly as we wanted it to when we planned it. So maybe we come back to it now. Let's start with Ahmad Diallo.
Yeah. So firstly, I think it might be valuable to bring up some of the arguments that Guy already presents in this email. Some of them include Ahmad's goal output and general performance level in the championship. Some include skills such as his, you know, and this is to quote, decision-making, timing, quality of pass, work rate, and out-of-possession work. And I think all of that is relatively true. Like, I think Ahmad did have a relatively impressive season in the championship. And I think at this time last year, we were both expecting him to be a little bit more involved than he ended up being last season, provided that he stayed. I personally thought it was really weird that he didn't really play much at all until that goal in the FA Cup against Liverpool. And I also think that a lot of this stuff about Ahmad being, you know, a skillful player on the ball, a positive decision maker, a player who I think very much improves this United side's aptitude for possession football in the final third. A player who I think can probably fulfill the defensive responsibilities of a press. A left-footed right winger, which is a profile that we've talked about less so last season when everything was kind of falling apart, but we talked about a lot in the 2022-2023 season when Anthony was playing a lot of minutes, and how a left-footed right winger was actually quite important to United in certain matches in build-up, because of the way a player like Dallo would play passes into the winger, and then it would be beneficial for the winger to be able to turn and play passes into midfield, which was easier if the right winger was left-footed. And so I think the combination of all of those things means that, combined with Ahmad's good performances late last season, he is probably going to play a lot of minutes in this team. I think he's probably gotten himself to third in the winger pecking order behind Garnacho and Rashford. And Rashford doesn't really play right wing. So I think that the combination of all that stuff means that Ahmad is probably going to play a lot of minutes. I think the concerns that I have about Ahmad in terms of ceiling are, A, his physicality. I think the matches late last season, a big highlight of them from Ahmad's perspective was his dribbling in, I think, transitional situations where I think he had space to run into and United were perhaps on the counter, and he would do very well at running at a fullback, pinning them back, and then being able to play a pass or sometimes even get a shot off. And I think those are really promising aspects of his game, but I don't think what you've gotten exposed to a lot because of how scattered United were last season is Ahmad's ability to perhaps create space for himself and others when up against a defensive block, which is something that I think was relatively evident at times in the championship when I watched him. And I think ultimately probably capped his underlying numbers in the championship at much lower than the, you know, 15 goal involvements that he ended up getting. And I think because his goal involvements were capped by that in the championship, I think there's a decent chance that they could be capped in the Premier League. I think his lack of high-end speed and physicality is going to suppress his ability to get shots off and get key passes off, even if he makes the right decisions a lot of the time. And so I think that kind of caps his ceiling as like a top tier prospect. That being said, I think his time in the championship and the Premier League has shown that he is much better on the ball, in terms of shielding the ball, using his body favorably in attacking situations. Like, one is back to goal. I think he's quite good at things like back to goal for a player of his size. And I think what that ultimately means is that I'm not as worried about perhaps the floor of this as I have been with a player like Sancho, who I think has really struggled to even keep the ball at Premier League level. And so I think where I lie on this is, I think Ahmad could be a very useful player, and I think he will be used a lot next season. I just wonder what the high-end ceiling of this player is, whereas I think with someone like Garnacho, we're already seeing signs that the high-end ceiling could be really high.
Yeah, so I'm not as convinced as you are that he's going to play major minutes this season. I still think Antony is probably third in the winger pecking order. It's a different question whether he should be, but I suspect that the manager still prefers Antony to Ahmad. Beyond that, I agree about the concerns about the physicality. Ahmad is small and not that fast. And that's pretty difficult as a winger unless you have game-breaking creative passing or game-breaking ball striking, or typically probably both. Or you can come inside and have a real impact in central areas. I like Ahmad. I still think he's a Premier League level player. I agree he could contribute to this team. I really don't think he has a future as a starter for United. I don't think, like you said, I don't think he can be a volume isolation dribbler at Premier League level. And that just makes it really hard, because that's just what you need. You need to be able to do that to be a starting winger for a Champions League team, I think. As for what he did in the Championship, yeah, he had a great loan spell with Sunderland. That guy mentioned. That said, the actual output of like the raw goals and assist numbers that look pretty impressive, 13 goals, 3 assists, they're not that impressive when you dig into them. Yes, he did have 13 goals, 3 assists. Only 10 of the 13 goals were non-penalty goals. Beyond that, he scored those 10 non-penalty goals from 5.7 like non-penalty expected goals. If you break that down by like per 90, it's basically scoring once every 5 matches and assisting, if you take the expected assists, once every 8 matches, once every 7 matches, which just, even in the Championship, that's just not that good. Now, are there reasons why he would overperform his expected goals? Yes, I think he's a good ball striker. Do goals and assists encapsulate everything he does? No, I think he is actually a pretty positive player when it comes to his effect on team shape, build up, and just general team play. So it's unfair to box him into just that, but I don't see him being a volume shot creator at this level. And that pains me to say, because I was really high on Ahmad when we first got him from Atalanta. But that's where I sit right now. I would be happy to be proven wrong, but I don't think it makes sense to build him into anything other than the short-term depth plans of the squad.
Yeah, I mostly agree. I do think there was some promise in the fact that in limited Premier League minutes last season and FA Cup minutes, he managed to look quite productive. Like I said, I think a larger sample might suggest that he's not actually that productive or as productive as he was. To define as productive as he was here, he played about 790s and got 4 goal involvements, all against Premier League level opposition, if I recall correctly. That's pretty good. Sorry, I got that wrong. He played about 590s last season and got about 3 goal involvements, which is quite good. It was all against Premier League opposition. The FA Cup goal was obviously against Liverpool. I think that was also in spite of not really being part of the plans, at least as it looked to me. I think he emerged because of his performances, not because he was kind of built into the setup. And so, yeah, I wouldn't go as far as to say I would plan around Ahmad next season. I wouldn't go as far as to say I think as a prospect right now he's on the same level as like a Hoyland or a Garnacho or a Manu. I mean,
certainly not.
But yeah. Yeah. But I do still think there's some elements of this to suggest that there is some hope that he could be a more productive player than he was in the championship. And if he's even a little more productive, I think the other things that he offers outside the goals and assists are actually quite valuable at this level, even as a long-term squad player. And so it's not really that I think either of us are low on Ahmad. I think it's more so that I think we're quite high on players like Garnacho and Hoyland and Manu. Whereas I think this is actually a relatively normal outcome for when you sign an 18-year-old. I think United paid a lot for this, and I'm not sure how I feel about in the future spending, you know, up to 40 million euros on a player who has never played senior football. But I think typically if you go and spend, you know, 15 million pounds on signings like this, I think them becoming a squad player is actually an upper percentile outcome. Because normally that player ends up costing you 30 to 40 million, as we're seeing with players like, you know, Ugarte, De Ligt, and every other player in that region, Xerxes, that we've been linked to this summer. And so you're saving money on it if you do it efficiently at that price, but I don't think the expectation should ever be that you're going to buy 18-year-olds who have never played senior football and all of them are going to become world-class players.
Let's sort of transition from that into a more general conversation about the wingers. If we're saying Ahmad is the third, potentially the fourth winger, how do you see the minutes getting split up here next season? Do you think we need a winger?
I would like a winger. Because, not because I don't think there are enough, but because I think the profile spread and quality spread of the current group of wingers is not going to be sufficient. I think you have two inside forwards, quote unquote, in Rashford and Garnacho, players who are going to score if you can put them in goal scoring positions, but not really players who I see as consistent high value creators at Premier League level. Then I think you have someone like Ahmad, who I think we're beginning to question whether he could be a really high value creator at Premier League level, but he's definitely not a high value dribbler, I don't think, or a high value goal scorer. And then you have Sancho and Antony, who aren't really providing anything based on the last few, the recent sample of their minutes. But I think prototypically they're supposed to be more like the Ahmad type than the Rashford and Garnacho type. And so I think there's room here for 1v1 dribbling in particular. But I don't think that will happen when you have five wingers in the squad who are going to command minutes. And so I think one of them would need to go. And I even think two of them would probably need to go. There's some rumors that United are willing to let Antony go on loan. They're not like tier one reliable sources, but the rumors are out there, and I think that's because I think you would need to shift both Sancho and Antony before the club would consider probably signing a winger. I think if you just got rid of Sancho, for example, you'd probably allocate that money elsewhere. So where does that leave the pecking order? I think Rashford and Garnacho are the starters. Rashford left wing, Garnacho right wing. That's my guess. I think Garnacho is also the second choice left winger, and so I think he ends up playing probably the most of everybody. I think Ahmad or Antony are the second and third choice right wingers. I think you probably see some Mount and Bruno minutes out wide at different points in the season, especially if you're using Xerxes as a second striker at points. I think you still try to probably get Bruno in particular in the starting 11, even if you're playing both Hoyland and Xerxes. So I think you might see Bruno wide. I think there's a chance you see Mount wide. That's about how I see it now. And then I think there's a chance Sancho gets back into the fold for some minutes, and it'll be dependent on his performances to get more. But it's right now he's like third choice left winger. And that's not even taking Bruno and Mount into account.
Yeah, I don't see how you can come into this season counting on Sancho for anything, but nevertheless, He is here. Which,
yeah, this goes back to this conversation we had not too long ago of, like, obviously, ideally, you would have the best possible players for every position, but I think ultimately when you get into the season, the players in the squad are going to play. Barring another dispute with the manager, you're either playing him to play him or you're playing him to sell him, and just letting him sit around and rot on the bench is just not, like, it just doesn't really
do anything for anyone.
Particularly work for anyone. And so even if the minutes he's playing are like 20 minutes at the end of matches when United are already winning, or United are definitely going to lose if someone doesn't change the match, so he comes on to try and save face, he's still going to play those minutes. Or like Europa League group stages, he's still going to play those minutes. And if he impresses, he could probably get more minutes, and that's probably where I am with that.
Yeah, yeah, I think that covers the wingers pretty nicely. I mean, do you see Rashford predominantly left wing and Garnacho predominantly right wing?
I think so, because I think they are probably far and away the best two in the group right now at this exact moment. And I think Rashford only really is a player I would say I would look to start for United at left wing. I've never really liked him at striker, and I've never really liked him at right wing. Or at least if I did in the past, the reasons I had were not sufficient. And so I think I would probably keep him at left wing with that in mind. And that means that by default, Garnacho would play right wing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Which makes me feel pretty strong in my conviction that we do need another winger, like a somebody who can compete for a starting position, but it's just so, it can't be a priority this summer. Because there are so many other things that have to happen that I think it's just going to be the thing next season that we are lamenting. And at least we'll have numbers there. I don't know if that'll mean anything, but.
That's probably a team in the top quarter of the Premier League.
I think last season we struggled against blocks and it was not the main problem, but it's still something I lamented.
I see. I get what you're saying. I think it will be something that is lamented. I don't know if it will be the thing. And maybe in terms of personnel, you go into next summer and the first thing you're looking to buy is a starting forward. But I honestly feel like a lot of top Premier League teams right now are struggling against blocks because of player personnel. I don't think it's like a one-off issue. And I think for the first time, I have confidence that a lot of these players that United have in forward areas are quite talented. I think you are probably a little bit too dependent on Rashford having a season like Ten Hag's first season and not like Ten Hag's second season. But I think if he has a reasonably good season, you have a lot of options here that can score a lot more goals than this team has scored under Ten Hag.
Fair enough. We'll see how it plays out.
Like, I mean, okay, in 2022-23, United got third, and I know the league wasn't as strong, but United got third with an attack consisting of Antony, Sancho, Weghorst, Ronaldo, and then Rashford and Bruno. As much as you need to get top four?
Yeah. See, like,
I think that's probably fair. I guess I'm just not inherently expecting top four even though I think it should be the goal.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be the goal. I think if you don't make top four, you have to change the manager, quite frankly, unless you see huge, huge seismic shifts in the way that the team is playing. You just can't be in year three wallowing in the mid-table. But I don't know. Maybe we don't even want to include that. Maybe we leave that for a later episode. But yeah. All right. I think we can leave that topic.
Yeah. I think point is the squad here insufficient? Yes. Do I think it is also quite good and the best United have had in a couple of years and capable of scoring a lot of goals? Yes, I see where the goals are coming from up front. I see where goals are going to come from out wide. I see where goals are going to come from in midfield. I don't think the options are perfect. I don't even think the options are top four level, really. but I don't think that there's any excuses for not being a consistently better attack or a consistently more efficient attack than last season and a consistently better attack than the season before. All right. Suede asks, Community Shield in 3 weeks. Do you go with the sit super deep playing for our lives thing or ease up a bit and experiment with some of the new signings? So Case, here's what I'm going to say. And we'll probably get to this closer to the Community Shield as well. But at this point, give me a prediction for your starting 11 for the Community Shield and how you think that game might go in comparison to the FA Cup final.
Can I predict players who do not currently play for the team?
Yes, okay. You can.
I'm going to say Onana in goal, Shaw at left back, Lisandro Martinez at left center back. I'm going to say De Ligt hasn't been completed by then. I'm going to say that takes a little longer because of sales. So let's say Maguire at right center back, Dalot at right back, Ugarte, Mainoo, Bruno Fernandes midfield, Rashford left wing, Hoyland center forward, Garnacho right wing. That would be my guess for the starting 11. And I don't know if I don't think you sit in. Like, I think it would be it's not a, like, you want to win it, but
I get, like, what you're saying.
Don't sit in against City in the Community Shield. Like, come on. It just would not set the right tone for the season. I think you got to go out there and try to play. And I do think they will go out there and try to play.
I definitely think there are going to be a lot of eyes on United that day and a lot of people coming to conclusions of what the season is going to look like because it's the first quote-unquote real match. I think if I went first, I would have picked the same starting 11. But because I'm not going first, I'm going to throw in some curveballs. Okay. I don't think Mainoo starts. I do, but I'm going to say Mainoo doesn't start, and I'm going to say Mount does. I'm not necessarily going to say Mainoo for Mount, but I think there's a chance, given that Mainoo started the final of the Euro, that he's given a little bit more time, which is why I've picked him to not start. Same with Luke Shaw. I think you come up with some kind of solution at left back. I don't know whether it'll be like Dalot left back, Wan-Bissaka right back,
or
it'll be like
by then.
I'm gonna say it's probably more likely that Dalot plays left back and Wan-Bissaka plays right back,
or vice versa. But yeah,
in midfield with the vacancy left by Mainoo, you probably have, I don't know, McTominay or Casemiro, whichever one is still around. Based on the rumors, one of them might go in the next few weeks. I'm guessing not both of them will go. So whichever one is left possibly starts this. And then I will say Mount starts in the front three, or the front four. And Garnacho doesn't, as the one who went the furthest in the Copa America. So I guess by that logic, Lissandro also wouldn't start, but I think Lissandro will start. So I'll go Onana, Dalot, Lissandro, Maguire, although I'm tempted to say Yoro, and Wan-Bissaka. Then I think you go Ugarte, let's say McTominay, Bruno, Mount, Hoyland, Rashford.
Interesting. Neither of us put Zirkzee in our starting lineups.
Yeah, I don't think so. He went quite deep in the Euros, and I think it's
he did not play.
I don't think
Euro,
this is the
yeah.
He didn't play, but he hasn't really
rested.
He hasn't really been around. I guess in theory he's been around longer than Euro.
Yeah,
but still.
I think yeah.
I didn't have Euro either, but I don't think City is the game. Ten Hag goes, let's run two strikers, and I also think Hoyland starts. So
I think
you might see him against Fulham in the first match of the Premier League. I don't really think you'll see him against City.
I think we potentially need to reshape our idea of what two strikers is. Because I'm not sure that Zirkzee is going to look like a... I'm not sure it's going to play like a two-striker system when he's playing.
I hear what you're saying, and I think there's a big argument that most teams already play with two strikers as far as defensive shapes go. But I don't think that you're dropping Hoyland, and I don't think that you're dropping Bruno. And so you're either playing Bruno out wide. Actually, no, you know what? I think there's a chance you drop Hoyland based on the FA Cup final where Hoyland didn't play and he was on the bench. But I don't think you drop Bruno. And so I don't think you play... I'm not going to say I don't think you play a two-striker system, but I don't think two strikers start the match on the pitch. Two players known formally as strikers.
I don't think consistently they do, but I think we're going to see it a pretty good amount. Because I think this is going to be part of how you get around the fact that we probably don't have enough top-line forwards is you've got two players that I suspect he's going to trust at center forward, and that means both of them are going to play. And that might even mean, like, one of them in a wide role. I don't know. But I think we're going to see some funky stuff, as we always do.
I agree with that. Over the course of the season, I'd be surprised if it's Hoyland Zirkzee in the Community Shield. Like, I think the first Premier League match against Fulham, I would not be surprised if you're running a front four of, like, Hoyland Zirkzee, Bruno, Rashford, for example. Or Hoyland, Zirkzee, Bruno, Garnacho. I would be relatively surprised if it happened in the Community Shield, seeing as United didn't even start the FA Cup final with one striker. And that wasn't due to lack of availability.
Yeah, we'll see. I wouldn't be that surprised, but I'm not saying I'm predicting it. In fact, I very explicitly did not predict it, but...
I will say, though, I think you might be right that Zirkzee starts. But... So my striker is optional as Hoyland or Zirkzee. Was it, last thing here, was it under Ten Hag, it was that Martial started the Manchester Derby and United won it and he was quite influential? Or was that... I mean, there were a few under Solskjaer, but there was one where Martial was clearly not really himself anymore, but just the fact that he was the player he was allowed United to get up the pitch in a certain way that helped. Was that in January 2022? 2023?
Maybe. The only one I can properly remember is him scoring two goals when we were already down 6-1. But that would have been in the autumn.
Before. That was the away game. So in the home game, Martial did start up front, and I remember him being quite influential in that match. And if Martial was trusted to start that derby, I do think there's something there in, like, I think you will get more with Zirkzee in that position than you would get out of that Martial. And so I do think somewhere, somehow, Ten Hag might be thinking of Zirkzee as a player for these big games when you end up playing on transition a lot more, and you want someone who's going to drop deep and let wingers like Rashford and Garnacho run beyond. And maybe he doesn't see Hoyland as quite that type of player.
Maybe, but I think Hoyland gives you a lot of thrust in transition and also just, like, lets you score goals. And
I don't disagree.
I just think it would be foolish.
I'm a big fan of Hoyland, actually, and I would play him
more
often.
The more I'm thinking about this, the more conviction I feel like I have that you play them both in big matches.
Okay, full fitness, everyone's fit, current squad only, what's your starting 11?
Week in, week out? Or, like...
Yeah, you can only choose one starting 11.
Okay, then it's...
Actually, I don't know, that might limit you.
No, only one.
Average Premier League fixture at home.
Yeah, it's exactly what I said, except... Ugarte obviously wouldn't be in it because he couldn't be. I guess you'd have to play. I have no idea who you'd play because you don't have Amrabat anymore. I guess you're playing McTominay?
Casemiro.
One of the two. Yeah. Has to be.
Or Eriksen is your other option, but I would not play Eriksen.
Not yeah. Yeah. Which means it's really important to get Ugarte and probably another defensive midfielder, now that I'm thinking about it. There's a lot of work left to be done. It's a good thing that we've gotten a head start, because otherwise I'd be worried.
Okay, but back to the question. You still going with the same front four? Bruno, Garnacho, Rashford, Hoyland? Yes. Or are you dropping one for Xerxes?
No, I'm not dropping one for Xerxes.
Are you dropping one for Mount?
No. No, that's my front four. Which is part of why I would really like to have another winger. But it is what it is. It looks like we're gonna run with this. But yeah, I think in bigger matches, you drop someone for Xerxes and you get him into the team. And you play him sort of as like a out of possession as a 10, I guess. But then in possession, yeah, he'll also kind of look like a 10. But yeah, I think he gives you a pressure outlet. He lets you, yeah, play through a coherent press more effectively and create chances. And I would also want to have Hoyland on the field for related but different reasons. So,
yeah, I think I agree with that. And I think even though it's only been 2 years and one was a disaster of Ten Hag, I think we've seen the four midfielders in a big game. We've seen the striker drops deep, or rather two strikers effectively play and one is more involved in the general play and out of possession, and then one is a running in behind in possession kind of player. We've seen all kinds of things already, and so I think you are going to see some weird things, and honestly, I'm kind of excited for that. It gives us the opportunity to cover different things every week and how they work and whether the different dynamics that are introduced give United an advantage or ultimately still leave us pining for a winger next summer, which I think it's very possible that both of them will end up being true. I think with that, we can call this an episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. Yeah, so we're recording right now on a Friday. I think there's a decent chance there will be transfer news over the weekend. So if that is the case, we will be back next week with more transfer talk, no doubt. Yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah, we'll be here to provide you with coverage on the news updates. And if not that, or if there are no updates, we will definitely see you next week. Stay tuned. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate the support. And we'll see you next time. Hope you enjoyed this week's Devils in the Details. You can follow us at DevilsITDPod on Twitter or on a variety of streaming platforms. Our awesome theme music was made by Jacob Connor. You can find at Jacob J. Connor on Twitter. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.